Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest tonight grew up in Wilmington, Delaware, and for 47 years has been a player, an executive in professional baseball and basketball. He's the senior vice president and co-founder of the Orlando Magic basketball team. He and his wife, Ruth, are the parents of 19 children. 19, including 14 adopted from four other countries. He's also the author of over 60 books and one of America's best motivational speakers. His name, Pat Williams. And I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
Now back to Anything Is Possible with Jack Krasula on News Talk 760 WJR.
We're with the senior vice president and co-founder with Rich DeVos of the Orlando Magic basketball team. Welcome. You've been on before. It's an honor to have you on again.
Well, Jack, it's great to be back with you in the historic studios at WJR up in Michigan, and just thrilled to be with you.
This state loves Mr. DeVos. Amway, Van Andel. Tell us one story about Rich DeVos.
Well, I met Rich initially in 1990, the summer of 1990, late summer. We were trying to bring a Major League Baseball team to Central Florida when they were expanding, and I flew up here. Never had met Rich through a mutual friend, Billy Zioli. I was introduced to him. Had about 10, 40, maybe a half hour with Rich trying to sell him on baseball in Orlando, and he said, okay, tell the National League, I'll go forward. And like that, you know, he was introduced to the sports scene in Orlando. We didn't get the baseball team, but he and his family became very attached to our basketball team, which we had started up in 1989 as an expansion team. And so when the team came on the market, and this would be the summer of 91, Rich and his family bought the club. So it's almost 20 years now that they've owned the franchise in Central Florida. A new building is going to be finished in October. They've poured their time and energy and resources into building a great ball club in Orlando. So we feel very honored that Grand Rapids is their anchor. That's their base. But they've picked Orlando as their secondary city in the United States, which people in Central Florida feel very honored that that happened. Rich is 83 years old now, still in good health, good sharp as can be. I wrote a book about him a few years ago called How to Be Like Rich DeVos. Maybe the best story I can tell you, Jack, is simply this. Whenever he is with a person and he meets them, he always says this: tell me about you. And he means it. And he listens. And then he asks more questions. And I often think that's the billionaire talking to the pauper. Tell me about you. When I wrote that book, How to Be Like Rich DeVos, it really hit me when I'd finished it that here may be the most unbelievable business leader in the history of America, who's built this magnificent company with a partner. They've transferred it to the next generation. He's never compromised his character. His marriage is intact. His faith is strong. I mean, nothing has wavered from the time he was a small boy growing up in Grand Rapids. In other words, wealth didn't destroy him. And there has never been a leader who has been more generous in the education field, in the medical field, in the sports field. I mean, he just always is reaching out to impact people positively.
You go to Grand Rapids, their fingerprints are everywhere.
That's Pat. Right.
You know, the hospitals.
It's a beautiful
Van Andel
story.
It's spectacular.
And they in turn, Jack, inspire other corporate leaders in Grand Rapids to step up as well and make a difference in the community. So I don't think we've ever seen anybody quite the likes of Rich DeVos. Never will again.
If you followed his advice with your children and said, tell me about you, you'd listen for 28 days. You've got 19 kids. How did it happen?
Well, 14 are adopted. We got into the adoption bug many, many years ago. My wife, we had three children. I was the general manager of the 76ers. This would be in the 81, 82 period. But my wife talked endlessly about adopting children that didn't look like us, meaning Asian children. And after 10 years of me having no interest, in fact, putting it down, I realized I was going to have to make a decision and do something about it. Long story short, we adopted two little girls from South Korea. They were 2 and 3 years old when they arrived at the Philadelphia airport in September of 1983. And we took them home. We had 5 children, seemed like the biggest family in the world. Then a year later, another birth kid came along. And then we learned about twin boys from South Korea, and we said, ah, why not? And then 4 brothers from the Philippines, why not? And then Romania fell, and we learned about 2 little girls there, and it was like, well, what's 2 more? And then we went to visit Brazil and saw the plight of those children, and we said, well, we could do more here. Long story short, Jack, we woke up one day, and we had this massive family. They came over a 10-year period. There was 1 year when 16 of the kids were all teenagers at the same time, which is the year I realized why some animals eat their young. But I would just say this, international adoption is not for everyone, but for those with an adventuresome spirit, I really encourage people to pursue it. We're glad that we did. The kids are all raised now, are grown. They're 24 to 37 is the age range. They're all out of the house, thankfully. They come back to visit. We love the we have 8 grandchildren that they brought us, and we're enjoying them immensely. And so that's it in a nutshell.
When we were teenagers, we had to traverse through little firecrackers. Today, these teenagers and young adults, they're traversing through landmines.
Mm-hmm.
Talk to parents, Pat Williams, about what can they do to help their kids successfully traverse through those years?
Well, boy, that's such a great question, Jack, and there's no question. It's a difficult time right now raising children. Let me, if I were doing a seminar for parents, I think I would make 3 or 4 key points. Point number one, you are running the house, parents. You know, you set the rules. You determine and hold to your rules and your values. Number two, you've got to figure out the balance of love and discipline. Your children must know they're loved, but they also must realize that there is discipline in the home, strong discipline, and that there are consequences. Number three, your children need your time and your attention. This fallacy of quantity time is a fallacy. They need quantity and quality time. Principle number four, you need to be building into their life that at 18 they're leaving. They're leaving the house, like you and I did, Jack, and that they're going in 1 of 3 directions. And you're preaching this from the time they're 3 years old. Number one, they're going to college. Number two, they're going into the military. Or number three, they're going into the workforce. Number four is not an option of hanging at home on the couch playing video games. That's not an option. And then I would say number five is make your kids learn from the get-go that they got to help carry the load. That there's a sense of entitlement in our country with this generation that frightens me. The people, kids coming along, Jack, are sharp and bright, and they really are really in many ways way beyond us. But I see this sense of entitlement, that I'm due this, I'm owed this, that I deserve this. And you've got to drive that out of them very quickly. And they've got to learn that they are contributors to the family and that they're going to help carry the load. And they got to get shoe leather on the pavement every day because there are no gifts in life.
We're talking to Pat Williams. He's one of America's top motivational speakers. And now you know why. And I'm Jack Rasul, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
You're listening to Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Once again, here's your host, Jack Krasula.
Welcome back. We're with Pat Williams, who's completed 38 marathons in the last 10 years and climbed Mount Rainier. You've done it all, man.
Was an experience. I got inspired to take on a mountain. I ended up writing a book about that experience, Jack, Secrets from the Mountain. And never will forget my 2 or 3 days on Mount Rainier. I thought I was going to do Everest next, but Rainier cured me from mountain climbing. So I've stuck to marathons. I still plod away. I've done Boston, 13 times now. Did the New York and Chicago marathons back in the fall of 2009. So
what's the best time?
The best time I ever did, Jack, was my first one in 1996. They've all gone downhill from then. I did the Disney Marathon in Orlando in 5 hours and 8 minutes.
Wow.
When I suit up, the Kenyans are never threatened. I mean, they sleep well the night before, knowing I'm going to be there. But I find it's a way to stay focused and stay in shape. I'm goal oriented. If I don't have goals in my life, I really drift and wander. And so, as long as those goals are there, I keep my blinders on.
Pat William, what's the biggest lesson you learned from the 19 children?
Well, I think the biggest lesson I've learned is patience, and you can't. Each kid is different, Jack. I think that we raised them all the same, values, same instruction, same educational opportunities, same sports opportunities, but you can't mold children to what you want them to do. That's what I've learned. And along about 16 years of age, they began making their own decisions, charting their own life course. I did not always agree with them. I've had disagreements with them over who they've decided to marry. I've warned, I've cautioned. But at the end of the day, and this has been the hardest part of parenting, you've got to let them go. You've got to release them, and you've got 18 years to build into their life values, principles, but at 18, they're gone. You know, they're out on their own. And I think the hardest thing I've had is to let them go and not try and reel them back in and make decisions for them. And I don't interfere. As they're all adults now, and I've made it clear to them, I'm not chasing you guys. You know, I'm not going to be bugging you. I'm here always for advice, for counsel. Whenever you need help or input that I can offer you, I'm a phone call away. But I'm not going to be chasing you guys down. I raised you the best I could, and now you've got to conduct your lives as adults.
You and I actually met 3 or 4 years ago through a mutual friend. John Sally refers to him as Daddy Rich, Chuck Daly. And you've recently written another book, Daily Wisdom, Life's Lessons from the Dream Team Coach and Hall of Famer Chuck Daly. Tell us about Chuck Daly and the book.
Well, it's been a thrill to put it together. I first met Chuck in the mid-60s, Jack. I was a young broadcaster doing Wake Forest games. Chuck heard me. He was an assistant at Duke to Vic Bubas. And our paths crossed in the Atlantic Coast Conference basketball circles. And then I went to the NBA, left baseball, left the Phillies in 1968, and joined the NBA, where I've been for over 4 decades now. So I would intersect with Chuck along the way. But we really came together in November of 1977. Billy Cunningham became our new coach in Philadelphia. He wanted an assistant. We got word that Chuck Daly was interested. He was then the head coach at Penn, and their season was about to start. But I went over to interview Chuck at the Palestra after practice one day, and had a great meeting, and he made it very clear he wanted to join the pros. So we worked it out. I remember his salary that first year, $35,000, Jack. And Chuck never stopped reminding me of that, by the way. And he joined us as Billy Cunningham's assistant. And so we were together those 4 or 5 years. I spent a lot of time with him, really got to know him, and he became a very close friend and associate. And then, of course, he left. He got a head coaching job at age 52, which is amazing. Vince Lombardi, by the way, was 47 when he became the Packer head coach. Chuck's 52, lasts about 2.5 months in Cleveland with the famous Ted Stepien, the owner. And Chuck's back in Philly out of work. We put him to work on our broadcasting crew, and it seemed like his coaching career was over. I mean, nobody was talking Hall of Fame and Chuck Daly in 1983 in that period. But Jack McCloskey here with the Pistons hired him, and Chuck was the perfect match for the Isaiahs and the Trapukas, and then came Sally and Rodman, and they trade for Lambeer from Cleveland, and Chuck has this absolute menagerie of personalities and egos and complications, and he was just the maestro at putting that group together. And now is a coaching legend, will always be remembered as one of sport's greatest coaches, and it all was really launched from here in Detroit. And so he passed away in May. People are still shell-shocked that he's gone. And a young publisher who I've known, Adam Witte, in Charleston, South Carolina, who Chuck had mentored as a really young guy, Adam called me and said, boy, we got to do something about Chuck. And so then the question was, how do we put the book together? And the thought then, Jack, was Chuckisms. The famous Chuckisms. He would drop these little wisdom pearls along the way like breadcrumbs on a trail. And I spent all summer gathering them all up, came up with 52 of them, and then tracked down all the key people in Chuck's life to get back up and expansion on the principles. So really what we have here is a collection of Chuck Daly's wisdom. I think it's not a sports book. It's a business book. It's a leadership book. It's a life lesson book. That's really been a fun thing to put together.
Can you tell us one special story in the book or one special quote?
Well, I think it's a great point, and as I put everything together, I think maybe my favorite story, two quick favorite stories. One was George Blaha, the broadcaster here for years who did all of Chuck's games for those years, and he talked about Chuck and how he dressed, and he loved the good life. And loved to eat, loved restaurants, good restaurants. He said, and whenever Chuck, he would order, you know, at the restaurant for his entourage. And it was always lamb chops, as George said, or lobsters, big thick tomatoes, big thick onions. He said, you'd never see Chuck at a French restaurant. I love that picture. I can just see it. But I think the story that has stuck with me the most revolves around Rolly Massimino, the longtime college coach. Rolly was an assistant. Chuck brought Rolly to Penn as a young coach, and he really was his recruiter. And then Rolly, of course, went on to Villanova and had a long coaching career. They all retired down to this colony in Jupiter, Florida. So there's Chuck and Billy Cunningham and John Havlicek and Bobby Orr and
yes.
Bill Raftery and Rolly. And then Rolly decides to start coaching again at this little school, Northwood University.
Headquartered right here in Midland.
Isn't that amazing?
Yes.
An NAIA school. And Rolly, at 74 years of age, starts coaching again. And all of these guys, these famous Hall of Famers, all start going to the games. So at a Rolly game, there's Havlicek and there's Billy and they're all there. So now Chuck has pancreatic cancer. He's in the hospital. It's now May. He's close to death. And Rolly is visiting him every day. And he walks in the hospital room one day, and Chuck says, Rolly, did you make any calls today? Get any players? I mean, it's back 40 years prior, you know, when he's his recruiter at Penn. Rolly, did you make any calls today? Did you get any players? And then Chuck said, we want to be happy after the games. And see, after the Northwood games, they'd all go out and eat dinner.
Yes.
And reconstruct the game. And you know what, Jack? That's sports. I mean, that captures the whole industry that I've been in for 50 years. We want to be happy after the game. And how are we happy? If we have good players. And how do we get good players? We got to go scout and recruit. I mean, you want to break sports down to its rawest elements. Get good players, coach them up, win, and then you're happy when you go have dinner after the game. But in Chuck's dying days, he shares this wonderful little pithy insight. And so that's wisdom principle, dailyism number 52. We want to be happy after the games. I love it.
Pat Williams, and I'm Jack Crisula, and this is Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
Welcome back to Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Now, here's your host, Jack Crisula.
We're talking to Pat Williams, the author of over 60 books. The man writes 2 to 4 books a year, but now I know why. He just tells stories of friends. Great idea. I had the blessing and honor to play golf with Chuck Daly many times. Mm. And 3 of your Chuckisms. Number 47, not a problem. How many times he was behind a tree or I'm behind a tree? Jack, not a problem. Number 42. People would come up to him. They'd discuss something, the Pistons or whatever. And finally he would say, whatever, and then go. And the last one, if you had a putt to win a hole, number 44, Jack, handle it. Very brief. Very concise.
Yeah, he was just wonderful in taking complicated situations and bringing it down to the rawest elements. Love those little observations, Jack. Here would be maybe the first Chuckism that hit me in that first season in Philadelphia. It's the 77-78 season, and we're sitting there with Julius Erving, and I mean, we got a really outstanding club. The young Darryl Dawkins and Lloyd Free, Doug Collins in his prime, and we're meant to win a championship, and we don't get it done. George McGinnis is still there. And we lose to Washington in a crushing Game 6. Never will forget it. I can still see it right now. Horrible defeat. We're knocked out of the playoffs. And the year before, we got to the finals. And the next morning, Chuck walks into my office. This is his first pro season. And he said, ours is a suffering business. And then walked out. I said, Chuck, wait a minute. What? He said, well, he said, everybody goes home and suffers except one. He said, one coach, one organization, they'll go home happy. Everybody else suffers. And he said, and the further you go, the more you suffer. And I've thought about that a great deal. I mean, he said that to me 30-something years ago. And, everybody suffers except that team that has the parade at the end of the year. And he just had this wonderful ability to take situations that look kind of tricky or complicated, and he'd narrow it down to one little phrase and just summarize the whole thing.
I asked him once, what was the difference between coaching college, high school, and the pros? And he said, well, high school and college, you're like an uncle coaching 12 young men. The pros, you're trying to coach 12 CEOs.
That's right.
Each one was their own organization.
Yep. And then he would say, NBA players aren't complicated. They only want three things: 48 minutes, 48 shots, and $48 million. And he said, that's all they want. He said, they're not complicated. But I think he was cut out to be a pro coach. He liked the lifestyle. He loved, you know how he dressed, Jack. I mean, nobody looked better. And he liked the people. He liked the life. He liked the challenge of dealing with these elite athletes. And he knew how to get his ego out of the way. I mean, and he would caution young coaches. Eric Musselman, I tell the Eric Musselman story. He said, you're out there too much. You know, Eric would check in with him. He said, I'm seeing too much about you, hearing too much about you. Players don't like that. He said, get off the stage. In other words, it's a players' league.
When you had your negotiations with him to sign him to Orlando, I believe you had everything down, the salary, the bonuses, the cars, the condo, but he fought you on one thing, the per diem.
Yeah, he wanted $1 more than Pat Riley. $1 more than Pat Riley.
So what did you give him?
He got it. Yeah, we want you to be happy after the games, Chuck. So we want you to be able to buy one more thick tomato, you know, to put on your plate. And I guess that was the competitor in him. Chuck never made any money till his last contract. You know, in his days with the Pistons, those were not great money days for coaches. And then he went to New Jersey out of retirement after the Dream Team, and it was a nice salary. He didn't really get a big-time salary. We brought him to Orlando in 97, three-year deal, $5 million a year. And after 2 years, he'd had enough. Now, there's an interesting insight into Chuck Daly. I mean, if anybody else, Jack, you grind out that third year, no matter what it takes, wouldn't you? But he knew he didn't have the energy, didn't have the heart for it, and had enough. And he notified us and said, that's it, I'm retiring, and left $5 million on the table. I'm not sure too many coaches who would do that at any time. And that was when he really made, you know, major dollars.
You know, he grew up in the Depression era, mm-hmm. and he never really left that. He told me once, he said, Jack, I have never bought a golf club. He said, in that trunk, there's probably 50 drivers. I've never bought one golf club.
And didn't pay for too many meals.
That's right.
And then one another Chuckism, never pay retail. Yes. Never pay retail. He spent countless hours with all of us, teaching us how to dress, how to match clothes properly, where to get the best deals. And another great Chuckism, nobody looks bad in a blue suit. That was his theory. He said, you got to have a blue suit.
Now,
nobody looks bad in a blue suit.
When he was in town, he would eat at Johnny Giannopoulos, 2-3 times a day, or a week, rather. And he made the statement, Johnny never bought him a free meal. Okay? So if you're listening, Johnny, Chuck Daly.
Well, you got to check out Giannopoulos just in honor of Chuck. You know that. And we, when we were in town recently, we made sure that we ate there, Jack. We made sure that we ate in honor of Chuck. He would have been disappointed if we didn't.
So let's go to the next subject. I want to talk about the book, The Warrior Within. Right now, a lot of men, husbands, dads, a lot of suicide, a lot of depression because they feel they're failures.
Mm-hmm.
They're in over their head. They don't know a way out economically, and they're depressed. And your book, The Warrior Within, is about being a true man. Please.
Well, I think, Jack, what I was trying to teach in that book, a couple of things. First of all, men, you're leaders. That you're the leader in the home. You're the leader with your children. You're the leader in your communities. We all have a role of leadership. And I spent a lot of time in that book challenging men, Jack, to step up and take that role of leader. Your wife is waiting for that. Do not abdicate your role as leader. your children are going to be influenced as future leaders by what you teach them and train them in this area of leadership. So we spend a lot of time in that area. The other thing that I would really challenge men, Jack, is don't be ashamed of your faith. You know, it's important that you be active in your church or your parish or your synagogue. You know, step up and be active. Be active in your mosque. You know, whatever your faith may be an active member of it. And show your children that because you have faith in God, you know, it does not make you weak, does not make you passive, that really is a source of strength. And so many men I'm seeing, Jack, are abdicating again that role of spiritual leader in the home to their wife. And that's not her role. She is there waiting for you to step up and not be a dominant dictator, but take charge of your family and set the pace, set the tempo. And I think another point that I would make in The Warrior Within is don't be afraid to have fun. You know, your kids years from now, I think their greatest memory is if years from now they say, you know, Dad was really fun to live with. My daughter Katie challenged me years ago because I'm rules oriented and strong, and here's how we're going to do it. And she said, Dad, why couldn't you just learn how to be a casual dad? I said, Katie, what is a casual? She said, well, can't you have a little more fun? A casual dad. And it reminds me, Jack, of the Theodore Roosevelt stories in the White House, raising a brood of rambunctious kids. And whenever they would leave, he would yell at them and say, have all the fun you can, TR would say to his teenage boys. And years later, Quentin Roosevelt was asked what he most remembered about his dad. And he said, fun. He said, Papa was fun. And so I think that's another key point. You can be the leader, but don't forget to have fun with your family.
When we come back, we'll ask Pat Williams what the wives can do to help their husbands today. And I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
Anything is Possible with Jack Krasula on News Talk 760 WJR.
Welcome back. We're with Pat Williams, Senior Vice President and co-founder of the Orlando Magic basketball team. Pat, talk to the wives. What can they do to make their man a special man?
Well, that's a great question, and women have such a powerful influence over men, Jack. My wife Ruth and I have written a book not too long ago called Happy Spouse, Happy House. And we teach a little principle called the BEST theory, B-E-S-T. It's an acrostic. B stands for blessing, E stands for edifying, S stands for sharing, and T stands for touching. And so I would simply just say this. When you bless your mate, you are doing kind things for him and or her. You are saying kind things. The power of the tongue is enormous. You're praying for your mate, you know, for God's highest blessings. Edifying means to build up, to undergird, to uplift, to be a cheerleader. And when you get a husband and wife, Jack, who are really rooting for each other and cheering for each other, there's no telling what they can do. Back to Rich DeVos real quick. When asked his role with Amway over these years, he said, I'm the head cheerleader. And for 50 years, he's traveled the globe just cheering people on. Well, we need that with husbands and wives. S stands for sharing. And this is more of a challenge to men because women are much better at it. But sharing hopes and dreams and goals and fears and sharing your feelings, men, to your wife. And John Wayne, by the way, Jack, never talked about his feelings, but real men do. And when you start sharing, it's like a super glue that bonds two people together. And T stands for touching, and that's physical touching, non-sexual touching. And so I encourage men and women, I mean, put your arm around your wife, hold her hand, touch her skin. Women's skin, Jack, is 90% more sensitive than a man's skin. And women need to be physically touched. It's called skin hunger. So one piece of advice that I would offer, whenever I go out with my wife, Ruth, I always hold her hand, always. Because if I let go, she'll go shopping. And so I hold on tight to her hand. So those are just some thoughts based on a book and teaching principles that Ruth and I have learned. Happy spouse, happy house. And if that wife is happy, guys, I can tell you this, you can play golf with freedom. You can go on those fishing trips, you know, without having your head chopped off. So take care of the home front first.
I've never seen a T-shirt, happy spouse, happy house, but recently I saw a guy with a T-shirt, happy wife, happy life.
Yeah.
Okay.
We kind of, I guess we kind of played off that.
Yes.
But it's again, men, you need to take charge in your home. You know, you're the leader, you're the initiator, you're the role setter in your home. Your wife made a vow years and years ago that she would submit to your leadership. That's so that there's not chaos in a home. But if you abandon that role of leader, then the wife is forced to take it, and that's not her role. Ruth and I have, and duties defined. You're really running a small company in a home. You know, the husband and wife are the CEO and the COO, perhaps, is a way to look at it. The chief executive officer and the chief operating officer. And you need to, and here's one other quick thing, Jack, as the new year starts, keep dating each other. I mean, the most fun you've ever had in your life was when you were courting and dating. Well, just because you've had a legal ceremony and you're wearing rings, I mean, don't stop that. Go out to dinner. Go to a Pistons game. Have fun together. You know, take power walks together. Go to the movies. I mean, have fun. Keep dating. Keep courting. Don't stop doing that.
Pat Williams, how can we learn more about your books, speeches, CDs, etc.?
Jack, I've got a website. It's patwilliamsmotivate.com, patwilliamsmotivate.com. In the case of this Chuck Daly book, Daily Wisdom, go up to amazon.com and punch it in. Or go to the team store at the Palace when the Pistons are home. They've got a supply of them as well. But I always like people to visit that website. Anybody interested in a speaking engagement can do the same. Just patwilliamsmotivate.com. I think people will find it interesting.
You've met and studied about so many fantastic people. What do they all have in common?
I think what they have in common is passion for what they're doing. Whether it was Jackie Robinson, who I wrote about, or John Wooden, who I wrote about, or Walt Disney, who I wrote about, whether it was the late Bill Veeck, my mentor in sports management, I think when you really study any life, these people, from the time they were young, they figured out early, Jack, what they were here on this earth to do. They attacked it with reckless abandon. They had this enormous passion, this enormous enthusiasm and energy for what they were doing. And then hitchhiking off of that, you got to come up with a way to get paid for that energy and passion and enthusiasm. But I think that's the common trait that I've noticed with all successful people. So therefore, I think it's safe to say that I could say to anybody, figure out what you love to do and then come up with a way to get paid for it, and you'll have a great life.
3 years ago, I asked you to write me your philosophy of life. What is it?
Oh, isn't that great? Look at this on Magic Letterhead 11807. Jack, my philosophy of life is, number one, enjoy your life. Number two, take good care of your health. Number three, be good to people. Number four, stay close to the Lord. Go for all the magic, Pat Williams. And by the way, two of those points, Jack, I got to share this with you. I do a radio show in Orlando each week, and many years ago, I interviewed Joe Falls, the longtime Detroit writer who is one of my all-time favorites. I miss him to this day. And at the end of the interview, Joe said to me, I want to say two things to your listeners. He said, here are the two things that I've learned. Enjoy your life and be good to people. Talk to you later, Pat. That was the last time I talked to Joe Falls. And so I pilfered two of them from Joe and put them on that list that I mailed to you. But good advice from the old writer. Be good to people. Enjoy your life.
You also have 7 keys to leadership. Quickly.
Well, that's my hot button. I write and speak about this across America. 7 keys in my study. Number one, great leaders have vision. They see the future before it gets here. Number two, they have the ability to communicate their vision. They talk about it in front of other people. Number three, they have people skills. They know how to get along with people. That was one of Chuck's great strengths. Number four, character. You can't be a great leader if your character is not strong. Honesty, integrity, humility. Number five is competence. Leaders are good at what they do. They're studying, they're learning, they're teachers. They are working hard every day to be better leaders. Number six, boldness. They make decisions. I'm the decider, said George W. I decide what to do. And then everybody would rip his head off. But you've got to make decisions. And then number seven is servanthood, a serving heart. Great leaders understand they're not in a position to dominate people, to crush them, to manipulate them, but really there to serve.
Last questions. we've just ended a tough year. Tougher than most any in our lifetime. New hope, new optimism. We all want it. We crave it. What should we do to have a good 2018?
Well, here's what I would do. I was in Detroit not before the holidays, Jack. I read this shocking story about the educational grades and the scores and the reading issues among the Detroit public schools. So here's a challenge here at the very start of 2010. I'm going to challenge every one of your listeners to make a commitment today, January 3rd, to read 1 hour every day the rest of your life from a book. Not the same book, but from books. The good news is you pick the books. And I'm not anti-Kindle and all of this other stuff going on, but I love books. So if you'll read an hour a day from a book that you're interested in, at the end of 1 week, you'll have read a book. In 1 year, that's 52 books. In 10 years, that's 520 books that you are interested in. And what happens in that process, Jack, this cranial muscle, this little two-pound issue up there in your skull, about the size of a cantaloupe, it needs exercise. And the best way to exercise is to attach a book to it. And so if we want to help solve the problems in the Detroit public schools, we as adults, leaders, you've got to set the example. How are you going to get kids reading if you don't read? And Mark Twain said years ago, what's the difference if you can't read and you don't read? So I would think that's a great, great challenge for the whole city of Detroit. Everybody get on the same page. We're going to be reading 1 hour every day the rest of our lives from books that we are interested in. And you don't think that'll rub off on young people who see that? So there's a good challenge for 2010. That and the Pistons get in the playoffs and the Tigers win the World Series. And the trade with the Yankees turns out to be a sensational move by David Dombrowski, and everybody's happy.
And Dwight Howard, Superman.
and Superman flies through the air. And the Lions, next year, what's real? They go 8-8. Should we go 8-8? Does that work? And everybody's happy.
Pat Williams.
Good to
be here.
What
a leader. Thanks a million. God bless.
Great to be with you. Thanks for the invite, Jack.
Please join us next Sunday. Until then, I'm Jack Rasula. Thanks for listening. And make it a great week. Make it a great 2010. Because with God, anything is possible.